What's poppin', people? Welcome back to Say Less with Kaz and Low Key.
What's going on, families?
My name is Kaz.
My name is Low Key.
Welcome, welcome. Yeah. Shout out to What's the Sport. Shout out to Brother HQ. We are here.
Yeah.
In the lines, then once again, yeah. Jake behind the boards.
Jake.
Jazz over here.
Oh.
A fan favorite already. Talking shit.
Yes.
We got Sid back here. We got Vic, the proprietor of this great establishment, the Lions Den.
What's going on, Vic?
And we got Eden, Matt McMahon, in the cameras today. Everybody
yeah.
say what's up with Eden. Everybody knows Eden knows how far
Look,
we go
Sid's on
back.
Camera. Look at her. She's
oh, say you.
She's on camera.
In camera shot now?
No, no, I'm not.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I'm about to say, like, you should be the furthest from camera shy out of everybody here.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Boy. This is our show, but
not until Jazz starts talking.
My name is Jazz, and I have something to say.
Basically.
I was going to leave it alone. But when you speak up, that drop is coming.
Yes. Yes. That's going to be our Joe Budden drop.
Yeah, we are all. My name is Jazz.
I have something
to say. You're going to
miss me when I'm gone.
Oh, shut up. Shit, shut up. God.
Why can't women take jokes, bro?
Oh, let's not get into that. My
name is Jazz, and I have something to say.
You guys can't take jokes.
Jazz,
I understand good jokes.
Yeah. Guess what? It's pointless, Jazz. It's pointless.
Jazz. It's inside joke.
You just ruined my joke to the whole world. I'm really upset.
You don't fucking Google. Shut up, bro.
Anyway, it's a fun episode today. Shout out to everybody who checked out yesterday's episode. Shout out to Tisha, Tisha Allen, who was a guest. Follow her on Instagram.
Yeah.
Shout out to everybody following us on Whistle and Brother and you and me and everything we got going on. I had a tweet earlier today because I said this Juicy J and Nas thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yesterday, me, Lo, Sid, Jazz, we took our ladies out to dinner last night, and we got into a little bit of a heated dispute.
You got into a heated dispute with yourself.
Well, to be fair, they all got into a heated dispute with me, right? Like, I was the only one
pointless, bro.
That was going hard for this, right?
Pointless.
For anybody who may not know or wasn't paying attention to Twitter, you were on the Versus Twitter account, or I think Timbaland tweeted it or whatever, and said, who do you want to see next on Versus, right? And everybody was throwing out the two people they want to see. A lot of people want to say Chris Brown Usher. Yeah. A lot of people saying they want to see Bow Wow on something. But it's rare that you see like an actual artist like throw down the gauntlet. Yeah. Like, yo, I want him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Juicy J, Academy Award winner. 3-6 Mafia,
legend.
Founding father.
Yes.
Dungeon fan, but you know, he said that he wants to battle Nas in a versus battle, right? And while everybody was quick to just be like, whoa, why would Nas and Juicy J battle each other and music is so different and da 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 da, I thought it was a very intriguing battle for many reasons, right?
Three reasons why.
Many reasons. One of the reasons is we all know Nas is an undisputed hip hop icon, legend, like nobody disputes that. Almost 95% of people that you talk to that like call themselves real hip hop heads has Nas in at least their top five.
He's on the Mount Rushmore of hip hop.
Can we agree on that?
Yes, of course.
So in the vein of a versus battle, we're not talking about who has the greater career.
Right.
We're not talking about, I'm speaking facts, I'm not giving my opinion yet, I'm just speaking facts. We're talking about just in the vein of a versus battle. It's artist versus artist.
Song versus song.
20 songs.
Right.
And a lot of that versus battle and a lot of who we deem the winner out of these versus battles is determined by the crowd, determined by social media, determined by people who listen and be like, oh man, I forgot.
Right.
So I think Juicy J is intriguing because like he's not a name that initially jumps out on people's you know,
the
mouths.
Radar when it comes to like verses and stuff like that.
Right.
Who do you want to see go up against each other?
But when you talk about artists that have not just, you know, have had longevity, but are still relevant to this day, that still have like a sound that's relevant, and even back then, you know, As much as we love Nas, we always say, man, I just wish Nas had some pick some better beats.
Right.
I wish Nas was just a little bit better, heavily produced, or executive produced, yeah, or something like that.
A better A&R.
And that started a whole thing at dinner between the ladies, Lo, myself, because I don't know, it was either they, aesthetically, you wouldn't want to see it.
It doesn't make like this. It doesn't make sense. One, for the listener, because there are two different demographics that are tuning in for these fan bases.
Okay,
it's not serious. The boom bap hip hop.
Okay,
in the park. 80s, 90s babies, those are the guys. Then you have these niggas from the South. Not to say they're not intellectual. Not to say they don't care about New York hip hop. Right. But it just doesn't mesh well. It doesn't look good on paper. It doesn't look good in the studio. Mm. There are two different types of artists. Mm. Every artist that's been in the same studio has been, you know, either entertaining, energetic, you know, back and forth conversations. It looks good like that. Nas and Juicy J sitting in the studio, banter maker dance at the barbecue.
Yes.
Fucking, yes. You know, Black Girl Laws.
Yes.
Slob on my like, nigga, it just does not make any sense in any realm, in any universe.
This is what makes sense.
This
is what makes sense to me, right? So, do you watch a lot of sports? I assume you watch a lot of sports, right?
Assumingly.
A lot of games, you know, most fights, most games, like, you're, perfect example, you're a Giants fan,
mm-hmm,
correct?
Mm-hmm.
The first time you watched the Giants win the Super Bowl, who were they playing against?
Patriots,
right?
Right.
You believe styles make fights.
Yeah, of course.
You believe some teams may have more talent than the other. Like, on paper, you look at the New England Patriots, and there's no way that they should beat these guys. They got right. Tom Brady, all-time great.
Right.
You got Randy Moss playing all world. You got right. this lockdown defense. You got Bill Belichick.
Right.
In every sense of the word, you should not see this team lose. They were undefeated too, 17-0.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have lost, right? On paper. But then you got the Giants.
Right.
Ragtag, dirt dog defense, Mike Strahan at NASCAR defense, right. OCU and Yora.
Yeah.
God, who else is on that defense?
I forgot.
The other big boy. Anyway, I say all that to say this. Styles make fights, right?
Right.
Styles make games. Right. And if we just look at that Super Bowl and be like, Patriots gonna win, man. Why are they even playing this game? Like, right. Nas, you wouldn't have one of the greatest sports moments, one of the greatest.
Yes, okay, I see the direction you're trying to drive.
Right.
I see the direction, but if we're gonna talk about the best of the best from these areas of music,
mm-hmm,
Nas isn't the best of the best from his area. Juicy J isn't the best of the best from his area. Yeah. If we're gonna do a battle like that,
are they
give
not?
Me, no.
Why not?
Give me J.
Okay.
Right, and then give me somebody. All right, give me another Southern producer or someone like in that realm that could be.
Give me Jay-Z and Gucci.
your optimism about what these battles should look like, it's beautiful.
Why?
It's innocent,
yeah,
and I love it. Stop it.
What's stupid about it?
It's stop it.
You know why? You know why I think you think it's stupid?
Why?
You know why I think you think it's, and why I think a lot of people think a Juicy J Nas battle is stupid? Is because they are afraid to be asked, what kind of hip hop fan am I? Every hip hop connoisseur tells themselves, oh, I'm a Nas fan. Illmatic is my Bible, yada, yada, yada. And that's great. When's the last time you went and just listened to Nas by yourself? When?
Maybe like,
right, I'm gonna say like
2 days ago. Right. 2 days, that's perfectly fine. Juicy J has records that you don't need to go and look for. They will be thrown in your face.
But that's why.
Party,
but that's why.
If you're
but
at
that's
an event,
why it doesn't make sense.
It does make sense.
That's what.
That's what the versus battle is about.
That's what makes me say, what kind of hip hop fan are you?
Can I read the tweet?
Read the tweet.
He said, Juicy J is gonna play Banter Maker Dance. The Nas is gonna follow up with I Can. And then what you gonna do?
That yo, yes, bro, it's gonna go like that for five
because
rounds.
Gonna,
niggas
because,
gonna be pissed.
Because
I like it, but it's not gonna work.
That's the question I'm asking you though. Like, what kind of hip hop fan are you? You be
this
throwing
is,
money
this
in the club, and then you'll be
this
like.
This whole topic is a man who was bored taking his shit on his toilet and thinking of who can go against
two. But it honestly, like, it did yeah. garner a lot of conversation.
Got a lot.
It did garner a lot.
Got a lot.
I will
what
give him
that.
Doesn't mean that it makes it make sense. No one really. I mean,
it makes.
Like that.
I believe it makes sense.
He's not making it. You're not making it make sense.
How am I not making it make sense?
DJ's gonna play Cody and Cuff, and Yes. Rob's gonna play Life's a Bitch.
Yes.
That doesn't. No, all right. So, all right.
My
so,
man just sitting on 40 acres.
But the, why? Neighbors. Why is that? Why is that? Why is that entertaining?
It entertains me because I think a lot of hip hop fans are phony. I think a lot of hip hop fans are fake. I think a lot of hip hop fans will literally just say Nas in the top five, and they don't really listen to Nas like that. They just say if they're in a hip hop conversation and they're talking about their top five, you have to put Nas in there because you know since the beginning of time it's been who's the best MC, Biggie, Jay-Z, and Nas. And right. But Nas isn't in there, your hip-hop card gets taken or tested or something like that. But there's a whole region of people who didn't grow up on hip-hop like that. There's a whole region of people who grew up in the South, who grew up with hip-hop music.
Which is why it doesn't make sense when you pair him against someone like Juicy J. Yeah. You're literally just explaining my answer. You're saying a whole bunch of people grew up in the South, right? They have never heard of Nas tape, Lox tape, you know, Biggie, anything like that. Right. Doesn't mean they're less of a hip-hop fan than you and me, but when you put, these battles are to reassure us of why these people are who they are.
Okay.
Right? We're supposed to be reminded why they're great and why they are who they are.
Okay.
If you're not a Nas fan, which is not a bad thing, you're not gonna give a fuck about this battle. If you're not a Juicy J fan, you're not gonna give a fuck about this battle. It's already hard as it is.
Clearly people give a fuck though, because the conversation is still going. No. Like when after we talked about it, it was still a trending topic on Twitter. There was still a lot of people talking about and discussing it.
It's already hard to pair artists with this versus battle as it is. It's already hard to do that. So one, you have to make sure it's appealing. Two, you have to make sure it can actually stand the test of time. And three, these records resonate with hip hop fans, West, East, North, South. Those two are just, it's like water and fucking oil.
I think you're generalizing Juicy J a lot, bro.
I'm not generalizing.
I think you're generalizing him a lot. Like, that's an Academy Award winner. That's 3-6 Mafia.
Put it like this. If it was, I do this, Juicy J and Swiss Beatz. That makes sense.
Why?
That, because they're both producer artists.
Nah, and they both, that makes sense.
It makes more fucking sense than Nas.
I just fell asleep, whoa. Don't want to hear it. I would rather do like a Juicy J and The Weeknd battle. They're both artists.
What?
The Weeknd?
They have both haunting music. That would make more sense. Like, who wants to hear
this? This is not a drug versus battle.
That's like
what lean versus cocaine. Like, yeah, what the fuck?
No, bro.
I'm like, it's dark and brooding because they all take drugs.
I guess
none of us should actually make any fucking versus suggestions after this because she says Juicy J in The Weeknd. I'm saying Juicy and Swizz. You're saying Juicy and Nas. Yeah. Clearly, we don't know what the fuck we're talking about.
I'm making my point and I'm sticking to it.
I'll give it to you.
The Juicy J and Nas debate pulls the card of every so-called hip-hop fan, bro. If you can't see that to some people, Juicy J means just as much to them as Nas means to a lot of other people.
We're not saying it.
So, but at the end of the day,
battle them. I wouldn't even like. It doesn't make.
What ears do I have? Like,
there's
no
winner there. There's
it literally isn't. There is yo. There's no metric. There's no metric of measurement to win.
There is a metric.
Nas gonna play something for Nas. It's a waste of our time. It's not a battle. It's like
what's the what's the measurement?
There is a metric.
What's the metric?
Like I said, it tests your hip hop card. You're gonna hear a couple songs, like in the tweet said, you're gonna hear one Bands and Make a Dance, and as soon as you hear Bands and Make a Dance, you're gonna be, it's gonna take you back to a place, you're gonna love it, da 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 da. And then someone's gonna play Halftime, and I'm what, 33 years old, bro. I'll only kind of remember Halftime, but I have to respect it as a staple as a hip hop record.
Do you know what that does?
So in a versus battle,
what means more to me? You just gave Nas a handicap. You know why? Because everybody's gonna know Bands and Make a Dance. Everybody's gonna know whatever other shit he's got. But if Nas plays Halftime, snooze fest. Because you just said, what was the last time I played Halftime? Do I remember Halftime? And that's gonna fuck up Nas throughout the
But that doesn't mean
he's bad. That's not fair though. You don't do that.
You're making my point for me.
So now you're saying that Juicy J is more popular than Nas.
No, I'm saying a lot of y'all ain't Nas fans like that. That's the point I'm trying to make.
I think
hip hop. Everyone's not Nas fans.
I see what he's saying. Nah. I see what he's saying. I see what he's saying.
Everybody puts Nas in their top five because you're supposed to put Nas in their top five. I don't think people really bang with Nas like that. That's the point I'm trying to make, and that's why I feel like that's an intriguing battle because of Pulse
it's boring. Cars. It's a boring battle.
It's not boring.
That's boring.
If that's how you feel so strongly about Nas, like Juicy J could be anybody. It's like I feel like you just want Nas to go.
I don't think Juicy J could beat anybody.
No, she's saying it could like it doesn't have to be Juicy J. She's saying it's more geared towards Nas fans than an actual battle.
You're not saying why Juicy J in this battle. You're just saying, oh, people are Nas fans, and I want people to see and pull their cards, and aren't they gonna really feel this music, and the real Nas fans are gonna know. So who?
You're not hearing what I'm saying. What I'm saying is Nas. This doesn't take away from his legendary status. We're talking about strictly in the confines of a versus battle. 20 songs, who's got more bangers, who's going to get people more excited, who's going to turn them up more, right?
Juicy J.
Fair. And that, why? That
isn't fair. That's not fair. This is not fair.
So do you think Juicy J beats Jay-Z in the battle?
No.
Exactly.
It's more interesting.
Why?
Because there's
because people are really Jay-Z fans and people just put Nas in top five.
Jay-Z has the type of content to actually match up or make it interesting against Juicy. Nas does not have that. Nas has what? I owe you and fucking what's the other shit? Uchiwale.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. Jay has what? Big Pimpin'.
Yeah.
Money Cash Hoes. Fucking Show Me What You Got. Like there are a bunch of records Jay could pick.
That's all I'm trying to tell y'all. Man,
it does Nas, not mean niggas are not Nas fans, bro.
When you put people's resumes out on Front Street, when you gotta roll them songs out, when you get on Instagram and Twitter and you see those checklists of songs, it really puts stuff in perspective, man. Like, this could be songs that you love. Songs that I saw Tupac and Biggie versus like Cheat Sheet or whatever. And granted, I'm more a Biggie fan than a Pac fan,
right?
But Pac has so many songs I love. Just not as much as I love these Biggie records. So when you put them on Front Street for you to see and compare, it really tests the mettle of how much you really think you like this guy, right? Like, I feel like I like Nas as a, as a technician, as a lyricist, as an icon, as somebody who like birthed my hip hop fandom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean I want to hear that motherfucker all the time. Doesn't mean I want to hear him at parties.
And that,
doesn't mean
and
I want
that,
to hear and him that, and in the scope of a versus
so
battle.
Then you should ask like, so
I
then
you
want
to hear Juicy J at parties.
Right.
There's no other.
But what's versus?
It's a party.
A 20 song.
It's a
party. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, there's different types of parties. There's the Erica and Jill Scott.
Yeah. Yeah.
Soul party. I like that party too. Mm-hmm. That's what I said. Mm-hmm. But I don't like that mix.
Yeah, my ears are not trained to do that. Like my ears are not trained to do that. Like making that kind of cheat sheet would like fuck up my head like for a day. I'm like, it's just like conscious, cool, you know, black male struggle or whatever. And then it's Juicy J growing up in the depths of fucking Memphis.
You said no to Ratchet.
I'm like, nah, nigga, this is not. I don't want to make this playlist. I do not want to make this cheat sheet. So no, I do not want to see Juicy J. Please do not extend the invite to Nas. Nas, do not accept the invite. Because we do not want to say we love y'all both, but it's not.
I feel like there's like a tier of for like these versus battles. There's like tiers of rappers.
Yeah, of course.
That I feel like could only stand to lose something by doing it. Right.
Depends what it is though.
Like think about it. Who did Nelly go up against?
Ludacris,
right?
Which made sense
at the time. But I feel like a lot of people went in there thinking like, oh my God, like Nelly is motherfucking, he went diamond.
Right.
And he's got Nellyville, Intensive Grammar, you know, yada, 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 all this other shit.
Right.
Ludacris low-key embarrassed him.
And you know why? Because
song choice.
No, song choice, he wasn't drunk. Ludacris is a DJ and a host.
That's very true.
Ludacris is an actor. So Ludacris knows how to keep his poise. He wasn't in there shirtless with eating chicken. Mm. The weather was on his side. He had a presentation and the song choice.
Yeah.
And then we also forgot how many motherfucking features like this man was on.
Bro, aside, he was the feature king.
Just aside from his singles, aside from his albums. Yeah. He had like, what, a 3 or 4 album run? Nelly had, what, 2?
Yeah.
A 2 strong album run? That battle was
getting...
That
country shit. No.
Yeah, like that battle, that battle wasn't evenly matched because now we got to see and we got to remember how great Ludacris was just as an artist, not an MC, just as an artist. He dipped into to pop. He dipped into R&B. He killed mixtapes. Mm-hmm. And then now you have him all his whole album stretch.
You mentioned that you made a great point. Presentation is key.
Presentation is a very big thing. It's a very big thing.
I feel like it's you like we sing all these artists that we want to see in versus battles. Like everybody's like, oh, who would Jay-Z go up against? And who would all these other people go up against? Mm-hmm. Outside of like Jay-Z's like snarky, you know what I mean, condescending like stunt talk, you know what I mean? I don't know if he'd be that interesting as say like a Snoop. Who's like gonna dance? Who's gonna like put on a show? You know what I mean? Who's DMX? Who's gonna say like, "Where the bitches at?" Like,
all this other shit. Ludacris didn't do that,
but Ludacris was a host and a DJ.
Yeah.
So he had the, Nelly did.
Well, Nelly was drunk.
Nelly
was drunk.
Ludacris had the same. You know, he's a presenter, man. He's an actor. Like the motherfucker knows.
But even even in that instance,
He's animated in itself.
Even in that instance, it's still entertaining to watch because one, we're looking at an artist that doesn't necessarily talk about himself that much or give the history of his records or give the past or the collaborations. Hearing those stories from a person like him, that's intriguing. Mm-hmm. I want to hear the stories that we didn't know about behind the scenes. I want to hear about the records that didn't clear, the collaborations that didn't make it.
Right.
I don't really give a fuck about, you know, what Nas has to say about those kind of stories. I think, and not to say he doesn't have them, but he would just be sitting.
I was about to say, I feel like Nas.
I know, I think he does, but I just think it wouldn't be, like you said, presentation is the biggest thing in this entire situation. That's why Fab lost. Look how he was acting.
I really feel like
Jadakiss.
Yeah.
Entertaining, laughing, drunk, having a great time, performing his records. What was doing? Fab was in the corner sulking because DJ Booth chose the wrong fucking song. It's like that's just I don't know.
It was funny though, man.
Yeah, it's
funny to see
personalities.
People, it's funny to see people take it too seriously, right? Like there's been a couple like salty like artists and producers that would like kind of look at each other and be like, bro, like at the end of the day, this is supposed to be fun.
Well,
like,
yeah, Sean Garrett and Dream, they got into it.
They got into it a little bit. That was a little.
But much. I think the new one that's coming up next Thursday.
Yeah, let's talk about that, bro.
With 2 Chainz and Rick Ross.
Yeah,
they're doing it in Atlanta. That's a battle that one is gonna have stories, two is gonna have personality because Rick Ross and 2 Chainz are
those
just
two very animated,
very
people,
animated
right?
figures. Yeah. And I would like people to stop sleeping on 2 Chainz because here's why I think he's going to win.
Okay.
Rick Ross has a lot of records that in the closing confines of your house sound beautiful, right? He has those records that make you feel rich when you have a dollar in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
He has those records that make you feel like you could fuck any girl in the world, right?
Yeah.
2 Chainz records make statements. Mm. They have hooks.
Yeah.
They have those catchphrases.
Yeah.
And he's just an animated person to begin with. Rick Ross is a very smooth, charismatic, casual, fat, you know, rich, you know, a boss, you know, not to sound corny or anything. I think 2 Chainz is going to surprise a lot of fucking people. And then in addition, you know, play a circle.
I'm surprised how many people think 2 Chainz is going to get washed.
If you look on your timeline.
That's shocking to me.
If you look on your timeline, a lot of people.
And I was like, did y'all forget the early 2010s where 2 Chainz was
just like they thought
this dude out?
Just like they thought DMX was going to get
right. That's what I'm saying. Bro, so like, and on top of all that, man, like 2 Chainz is the hidden weapon in these versus battles for any artist, whoever is going on this shit ever again.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't got call and response records, don't do them. Right? Like, 2 Chainz got so many call and response joints. He's got so many records that like you could turn the volume off. Mm-hmm. You host, like you turn the volume off and the rest of the crowd like finishes the lyrics and stuff like that.
Song.
You got birthday song. It's your birthday.
The advantage that Ross can pull on this battle is one, the collaborations. Ross is like pretty much everywhere. He's worked with everybody.
Yeah.
Then he has at least, 3 or 4 records with Hov.
Mm-hmm.
He's got about 3 or 4 or 5 records with Drake.
Mm-hmm.
That could be used as an advantage. The question I ask you is, how impactful are those collaborations when you're going up against 2 Chainz, who pretty much had a lot of great singles with a lot of great features, tied to good music. That shit with Drake.
That's my. That's
so
another.
So it's like
that's another.
2 Chainz can pull from a big bag of tricks if he wants to.
That's another thing though. Like how many. A lot of them 2 Chainz and Kanye records, are they gonna age right now?
Mercy is going to be very, very good in that battle.
In this
verse was his best. He had the best verse on Mercy.
So of course, yeah.
That age is fine. Mm. We can use that.
I love 2 Chainz to death. 2 Chainz, I love you. But he has like a very like similar sound, a similar vibe. Mm. Rick Ross is not that. There's a lot of
he makes opulent music.
A lot of different vibes, a lot of different time periods in his life. Trilla, that was the album like every day for like that summer came out. Maybe the whole next two years, that's just like timeless. I feel like people will just get bored, that's the point I'm making. I feel you though.
Yeah,
but it's Rick Ross though.
I get it.
He has a lot of things working against him. I think it'll be a fun battle.
Yeah,
but,
you know, I
mean,
hear you.
It's just not fair too. I feel.
I just feel. I mean, this makes much more sense than the other shit we were talking about. But way much more sense. I'm just saying.
I mean, clearly one's happening and one isn't. Yeah. So I can't play devil's advocate. Like, goddamn. It makes more sense than the other one.
You're spending 20 minutes on both battles.
I'm just saying, what records are going to be that impactful? Aside from, like, BMF, aside from his verse from Harder to Paint, the remix. I mean, oh, let's do it. Uh-huh. What are those?
You're forgetting a lot.
I know, but I'm trying. No, I understand that.
When you're thinking of Rick Ross records, you're really just saying DJ Khaled records. And Rick Ross got a lot of those DJ Khaled anthims. Like, fuck,
but
we taking Nova.
How
all we do is
how
like,
impactful. How impactful are they, bro?
Yo, we say, listen. I crack jokes on Khaled all the time.
Right.
What does this man do? Right. Why is he the lead artist of all he's saying is another
right.
one?
Right.
And like, why? How is this your album? This doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
Rick Ross is a big reason why. Because from his first album to now, he's always had him to go to for any of these big records, especially a big verse.
Yeah.
So I think you might be sleeping on that. And his feature verses in general. Rick Ross, man, he has impactful guest verses just like 2 Chainz.
I think 2 Chainz.
But I think 2 Chainz's height might have been bigger than Rick Ross's height. I think Ross has been hotter for longer.
Yes. Yes.
But I feel like when 2 Chainz was the hottest,
and that nigga was smoking shit. And then you gotta configure this. He reintroduced himself to the world.
Yeah, bro, play a circle.
Reintroduced himself.
I'm not doing nothing. I'm a ball.
That's like, nigga, how do you do that and then get hotter?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a rebirth. When 2 Chainz gets on records, it's a moment.
Mm.
It's a very, very particular, specific, idyllic moment. Ross. Not necessarily, maybe like 4 or 5 records has those moments where it's like,
you think he plays Entanglements?
That's not a fucking good question, Jay.
Entanglements is a banger, bro. Stop acting like it's not good.
Stop saying this out loud to people.
Listen, I love Will and Jay's relationship just like anybody. Great song. It's a good song. I think
if he plays Entanglement, he loses. He loses.
In the house, I know he hasn't.
Yeah, the only time we heard it was on the radio.
The only
time we heard it was on the radio.
Yeah, you had to tell people what I play when I'm taking a shit.
That was literally the only time I heard you play it though.
Listen, August had a rough couple weeks for you, bro. I like the song. I like it, bro.
I think 2 Chainz wins this.
You think 2 Chainz wins?
I think 2 Chainz wins.
Yeah, hustling.
I was cooking the other day. Like,
yeah, okay.
Just Take It to the Head came on. I was in here like it just came out.
Yeah, you like that record.
Of course, of
Oh yeah, okay, great. That's you like that shit. No one's playing that fucking record in their crib.
Who wanna take it to the head? No, nigga. No one's
it's
playing
20
that
songs. Fuck out of here. No one's playing.
I don't think take it to the head cracks
no one's
the 20.
That shit. What the fuck are you talking about? Shut up.
Who made the 20? Oh,
it's
20 songs.
Yeah, it's 20 songs. Yeah,
20
songs.
Yeah, 20 songs.
It's not no.
It's to not, each.
How are we looking with MVP? Has the text yet? Okay, cool. Okay.
It's 10 records each. 10 records for each artist.
Me and Kazim had our own 112 Jagged Edge battle.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Just so.
But then they actually do the battle and then it goes the opposite way. But I literally beat him.
You can't say you literally beat him when it's only two. You can't say that.
When it's an audience of two.
He left my room defeated with a sad puppy after I like killed him all these Jagged Edge.
It's an audience of two, Jazz.
It's how did he say it? Jazz, it was two people.
She picked Jagged Edge, I picked 112.
And that's fine.
That's fine.
Yes, I know that, Sydney.
Because he ran out of songs. He's like, oh my God, I don't know what to play. And I'm like, I had a 112 song he could have played. He had no idea what to do, shaking in his boots. And I'm playing all these Jagged Edges back to back. Like, literally, he just...
Maybe it was just a night of just, like, you know, just coming together and playing beautiful music.
You don't need to go super hard.
Right.
When they're going to have the actual battle and they can decide for you.
Oh, my God.
And it was clear that 112 mopped the floor with Jagged Edge, yo. Not even with the full crew.
It was
like 3D
exactly,
with 2D.
Exactly.
Knocking out. What was that?
Oh, shit. That's good.
Oh my God.
My name is Jasmine, and I got something to say.
Jake, what else we got, man?
Jake, what we got, brother?
We got some NBA news.
Let's talk about it.
Trouble in the Bubble.
Or created a $1.5 million fund to help the WNBA players who are sitting out for reasons other than COVID. Or if they were sitting out for COVID, they could get paid and everything, but any other reason, they...
All right, so people may not know what's going on, right? I think the biggest noise that came from that was Elena Deladon. Elena Deladon is the former MVP of the league who has Lyme disease. She has Lyme disease. And it's a pre-existing condition that can make her susceptible to COVID and may not be able to recover as much.
Mm-hmm.
She took a physical... And she doesn't have coronavirus, but she didn't feel comfortable playing because she wasn't trying to take no chances, right? Mm-hmm. But according to the collective bargaining agreement and then the agreement that they made to go back to the league, the only time you could sit out is if you had COVID-19, right?
Gotcha.
Or you might have, you know, some sort of shit going on. Am I right or wrong on that?
Yeah, just health reasons.
It's not health reasons,
NBA,
right?
NBA let everybody.
The NBA, because NBA has money to blow, like they'll be all right. But WNBA, they're like, yo, especially you, Elena Deladon, you're one of the most, you know, you got Gatorade commercials. You're one of the most popular women's athletes we have. You're the cash cow.
Yeah.
You could sit out if you want to, but like, you know, it's gonna be hard for you to make some bread. So Kyrie Irving, shout out to Kyrie, who's been, you know, at the forefront of a lot of, you know, things in the coronavirus, social justice. Mm-hmm. Post NBA bubble world, he was adamant about not playing. He had his reasons why for not playing. And on top of that, he's putting his money where his mouth is because a lot of these players, if they choose to sit out and just for their own comfort, no corona, whatever, they're not getting paid. Something similar happened with Victor Oladipo too, with the Indiana Pacers, where he wanted to sit out, I think, and he was kind of rehabbing his injury or rehabbing his thigh or something. And I guess he eventually decided to play because, you know, it looks like it's been a safe environment.
Yeah.
The point is, NBA, WNBA, two very different playing fields that they're playing on.
Mm.
It's kind of messed up, man. Like, I ain't gonna lie. Like, talk to my fiance. Like, I'm a fan of the WNBA. Like, I watch games. Yeah. Like, I enjoy, you know, the game wherever. I watch high school games. I watch college. Like, any basketball I can find, I'm gonna watch. And WNBA is really good hoops. So... It's wild to me that, you know, Kyrie even has to do this to begin with. You know what I'm saying? Like, granted, I heard somebody say something the other day, and this wasn't what I feel. It was just a pretty valid point. I feel like the reason why they have to do this is because, you know, the WNBA doesn't have as much capital as the NBA does. And what league does? The NBA is a fucking global conglomerate.
Right.
Like, what are you going to do? But he says something like this. It's like people always like to blame men for the WNBA not being successful
Whereas if every woman watched the WNBA, it would be the biggest league in the fucking world. Like, there's way more women than there is men in any sport.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm looking at everyone. What are you talking about? I'm scanning the floor. It's like, granted, yeah, I feel like in my, obviously there's always going to be those people who talk shit online and say the snarky shit about the WNBA and they're not real athletes, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's going to happen. But in my estimation, like, almost the entire NBA, anybody who has any sort of NBA voice openly supports the WNBA. Like, Kobe Bryant, one of the biggest supporters of the WNBA, probably the...
Going straight to the end.
Exactly. Right. Like, he made it a point of duty while he was alive to make sure the WNBA was in great hands by the time Gigi was ready to enter the league, because she wanted it, you know, he wanted the WNBA to be on par with the NBA sometime. And that's why, you know, he made the Mamba Academy. That's why he coached his girls' team. That's why he went so hard and all that type of stuff. I've seen a whole lot of support from that side. It's crazy to think how much more support would happen if women in general, and men obviously, but just by sheer numbers, there's more women than there is men. It would be wild to see how far they can go if they have way more support on that side and not just say, well, men, you can't.
Do you think there's a reason for that the lack of support just from the, you know, women in the community, or is it just like...
I wouldn't know. I mean, I just feel like, you know, with the WNBA, like, it's always gotten like such a bad rap for, you know, not being the NBA.
It's a different game.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it is
clearly
a different game.
Yeah,
it's a different game, but like, I don't think anybody's ever like been like, well, I don't like the WNBA because...
Yeah, like, I've never heard an outpouring reason of why, like, it just doesn't get...
It's just the
lack of...
There's just lack of interest for a lot of people.
The NBA, how you guys have been like, you know, what's it, Pootie from New Jack City, waiting for basketball to come back down on the track, right?
Yeah. Women, like, how much for one rating?
Women give that, you're right, like, if women give that same amount of interest for WNBA,
yeah.
Which sadly, women don't.
Yeah, and you know what, you can't even say that. You can't even mention that. You can't even say, well, you know what, like, there's more women than men, like, if they all were just like, you know what,
a lot of women don't even care.
They don't care about sports, period, right?
So they're not going to jump over another moon to care about something else, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, even just getting the women, you know, group as a whole to care about sports in general is pretty hard. There's like a limited, like, it's rare. Like, oh, yeah, my wife's into football and she likes this. It's like, if you notice, like, a lot of women, like, they like their man's team or they go directly to who their father raised. I'm a Knicks fan because my dad's a Knicks fan. It's like a lot of women raised to, like, almost have their own identity in sports and figure out what they like on their own without the male influence.
Right.
And I feel like that's kind of maybe what we need to start doing and showing our youth and our little girl babies that they can like what sports they want, no matter what the men say. But that's really a lot of what it is and why I feel a part of why the WNBA suffers, because we don't really care.
I feel you. I mean, I feel like just in general that there's kind of like there's a divide there. You know what I mean? Like, there's a divide when it comes to just like general interest of the league. And, you know, I don't think, yes, there's definitely a sexism thing involved in that makes people kind of stray away from the WNBA.
Right.
But I do think we're at a point in 2020, especially now, where we can strike where the iron's hot to really make that league kind of... It may never catch the NBA, but it could be a generation away from being like a very valuable league. I mean, they just signed a whole new CBA where, you know, athletes are finally getting like first class flights and hotels and like stuff that you don't even think about in the NBA. You know what I mean? Like, they just...
But I guess, I mean, I just think it goes back to your original point that the capital is just not there. If the capital was there, marketing dollars are there, you know, you could promote it different ways, bigger ways. I think it's like there's not enough eyes on it because there's not enough money to do that. You know what I mean? Like, just, I mean, to Jazz's point about not knowing or having an identity when you're growing up, there's nothing, like, we can't pinpoint it. Right. We can't tell you, yo, that WNBA is coming back, or yo, they're in the bubble too, or yo, this is what they're doing, or we don't have Issa Rae walking like in the Staples Center for the Lakers or whatever, the ladies in LA. Well, I mean, yeah, it's just the money's there.
Well, the NBA is making the money.
Yeah, there's a return on investment for the NBA.
So you need to equal the playing field a little bit. I mean,
mean, the, when people look down on the WNBA, they say, what, it's boring, and that they don't pay their players, they don't treat them well. That's the first step in getting attention and just, I don't know, it, the playing fields are not equal, so it's hard to compare.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you have capital, you can know. Yeah. Yeah, when you have capital, you can put your resources together and
exactly.
You
can. They can get those big marketing right. companies. They can get Issa Rae, which would make sense because she's
a woman.
Who's here promoting the WNBA. They don't have the money for that. And you know what? Shouts out to Issa. Get your money, girl. I'm not mad at that at all, man.
Well,
I mean, shout out.
Capital. I would love to see her doing that for the WNBA. They need to equal the playing field so they can pay her that coin, too.
Absolutely.
Very true.
But, I mean, shout out to Kyrie Irving, man. Shout like, that's...
He did 1.5?
No, $1.5 million. He's trying to help equal the playing field.
Yeah.
All right, people, before we bring in our very special guest for today's episode, we got an ad. We got an ad to read. Yes, sir.
Read those ads.
Absolutely,
Keeps,
man. Shout out to
Keeps is in the building. Listen, if you're like me and you're losing your hair, at the age of 30 plus, Keeps is the medicine for you.
Yes, it keeps your hair, bro. So, yes. Like, if you're like low when you came home already and you're all gone and you have absolutely no hope, I mean, that's one thing. But if you're like myself, it's better to be preventative than, you know, working afterwards, right. Like once it's too late. So make sure you go to keeps.com/say less. That's KEEPS.com/say less, yes. SAYLESS. And what do you get when you go to keeps.com/say less?
First month is free, yes. Motherfuckers. First month is free. So please use that code. Fix your hairline, because if you don't, it's gonna go like the wind.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
Keeps.com/say less. First month is free.
Shout out to Keeps for sponsoring Say Less all day, every day. Make sure you use that code.
Yeah.
But now we got a very special guest.
Who
we got in the building
today? Who we got in the building today?
On the Say Less with Kaz and now Low Key podcast. I'm a big wrestling head, everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who is a special guest on today's episode isn't just one of my good friends, not just one of the greatest wrestlers of WWE history, mm-hmm. but he is currently in the midst of one of the greatest second runs mm-hmm. in WWE history. Like, if anybody watches wrestling, a lot of times, like, you get your one big run, and then you kind of, like, middle your way through the independents and, like, other, you know, companies and stuff like that. Not this guy, my man, MVP. Is on the show today, man. The CEO of the Hurt Business, the current United States champ, or sort of United States champ. I don't know which way we go with it. MVP, I know you're over there. I think we're looking at your fireplace. Oh, shit.
What is the deal?
In the hell is that? Try to keep the feds off you.
Little flashback.
Oh my God, what's going on, brother? How you feeling, man? What mask is that?
That's my Oni mask. Actually, it's a Hanya mask. Me and a few friends used to wear those some time ago when we would beat people up on TV.
And you've been beating up a lot of people on TV for a very, very long time. You're back in the WWE. You're on Raw. Killing it with Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, the Hurt Business. Before we get into all the other stuff, I want to talk about that real quick, man. I mean, I remember the last WWE event I went to was the Royal Rumble, and I saw you come out, and I was like right there. I was right there in the front row. I was doing stuff with Cricket Wireless, so I was like, I heard your music coming. I'm like, this nigga ain't just gonna come on, not tell me he's coming back. So I saw you getting there with Brock Lesnar. You got your moment on, and I thought it was a one-off, you know. We're in Houston, one of your hometowns where you reside at, and I thought it was a one-off. But we're here in August. You're in the midst of an incredible run with the Hurt Business and yourself as the United States champ and being one of the most versatile people on WWE television. Tell me the journey to get back. Like, who made that first call to say, yo, We gotta come get this guy back. Was it you? Did somebody else hit you? How did it all start?
As you know, I'm a father. I have a beautiful little boy. He's 5, he'll be 6 in October. And he's turned into a massive wrestling fan. and he just can't get enough of it. You know, to the point that his mother calls me concerned because he does moonsaults off the couch and all, you know. I showed Rey Mysterio a video of him doing a moonsault where he literally runs from the floor across the bed, hops up on the headboard, and does a picture perfect moonsault onto a pillow.
Wow.
And Rey was like, yo, I couldn't do that at 5. What is that? I don't know. I couldn't do it either. I don't know where he gets it from. But so because my son was such a big wrestling fan, I tried to shield him from it for as long as I could, man. And then that day came when every wrestling dad gets the question that he never wants to hear. Daddy, do you know John Cena?
And what did you have to break his heart? What did you tell him?
I said, no, son, but I do know Chono and La Parca and Misawa, and I know a bunch of other people I'm going to introduce you to. And we moved on from that topic very quickly. But no, seriously, the Rumble was in Houston, and I live here. It's not my hometown, but I reside here, as you said. And I just thought, man, how cool would it be for my little boy to see me in a WWE ring at an event for his first major, because he saw me wrestle for the first time at Booker T's promotion, Reality of Wrestling. And after that, he started calling it Daddy Fight. He was still little. He said, oh, that Daddy Fight? Oh, he'd see a little card or action figure. Oh, that's Daddy Fight. Like, yeah, okay, cool. You know? And then he started asking me about WW Wrestling. And I was like, oh, man. So I reached out.
Yeah.
And because they had reached out to me in the past about being a surprise entry. And one time I wasn't interested. The other time we didn't really come to terms. But this time I reached out, and fortunately, they welcomed me with open arms and said, we'd love to have you. And, you know, I explained, hey, I'm really doing this for my son. So they took care of me. They gave me awesome floor seats for him. And, you know, just every accommodation they could make, they did, which I was really happy about that. And Paul Heyman and CM Punk made the phrase popular some time ago. I'm a Paul Heyman guy.
I'm also a Paul Heyman guy. I'll say.
Paul Heyman reached out and said, hey, listen, would you like to do Monday Night Raw tomorrow night in San Antonio? And of course, yeah, I'd love to, you know. And they had me in some sort of a, you know, a little tag match or something. And the agent came and said, hey, look, everything's been switched around. You now have a singles match with Rey Mysterio. And I just smiled because I knew that was Heyman, because he knows Rey is my son's favorite wrestler.
Right, right.
So he came up to me and he said, my friend, have the best match you can have and just have fun. And me and Rey went out there. We had a fun match. And at that point, I was done. I was like, okay, cool. I did the Rumble. I actually got to see a video that my son's mother took of him watching me on TV doing my entrance along with me in front of the TV. And, man, you talk about, tugging on your heartstrings or, you know, whatever term you want to use, like that. The feels were heavy on that one, you know?
Heavy feels.
After that, they offered me a job as a producer, and I intended to retire this year anyway. And I said, yeah, okay, man. So I was producing, and then my producing duties got less and less as my television duties got more and more. And then we recently came to terms, and I'm no longer a producer. And we just came to terms officially on a contract. So I will be with WWE for the next few years.
Let me ask you a question. You know, the cast said this is pretty much your second run, you know, your second go around. Your son being an inspiration of doing this, has this second run ignited just more of that passion because your son is such a fan and because your son pays so much close attention to it now? Is a fire?
Oh, man. It plays a huge role. It's funny, the other day me and Shelton were at the track running sprints together, and I brought my son along, and there was one point during the sprints where, man, I was gassing hard, man, and I was ready to be done. And I hear a little voice behind me, keep running, daddy, don't stop, don't stop. And man, that fueled me. I got through those last two sprints and we were done for the day. And the bumps, and man, I'm 46, I'll be 47, man. And I've always wrestled hard. I never took a night off when I worked. I've got the cumulative bumps and bruises. And there are days when I'm like, damn, man, they're going to have me a 5 backstage segments, a VIP lounge, and a tag match. But then in the back of my mind, I hear that little voice, keep going, daddy, don't stop, don't stop. And, man, that makes it happen. And on top of that, I gotta say, man, I've been welcomed back with open arms. The reception I've received from the boys in the locker room, even a lot of the young guys come to me and ask me for advice and ask me for my opinion on things. All the agents I've wrestled with, they were my boys at one point. Mm-hmm. And Vince has been tremendously cool and appreciative and has given me nothing but praise. So the environment for me has been great. And, I also realize that, as you said, Kaz, this is my second run. Most guys don't get a second run, let alone the opportunity to have the stage that I have in a second run. And, my son's watching, and this is how I'm going to be remembered. This is my legacy as I, transition into whatever the next phase of my wrestling career is. So there's a few aspects at work that motivate me to put my best on.
Gotcha. Man, it's we've known each other for years, bro. And, every time I see the work that you're doing, anybody who watches wrestling, obviously people could watch for the wins and losses and all that type of stuff. But like, I always watch for like, yo, how good are you making people look? You know what I mean? Like, how good are you making when you're talking? Are you talking people up? Are you talking people down? And I swear, everybody that you've worked with in this second run has somehow been elevated, with you next to him, whether it's Lashley, whether it's Apollo Crews, whether it's Ricochet, whether it's Shelton Benjamin, Like, you've been working with so many people. You've been doing commentary on Main Event. You've been a valet. You've been, not valet, you've been a manager. You've been, you've done so much in such a short amount of time. I feel like, yeah, you said on Instagram you're the most versatile player on WWE because they literally throw you into every segment now. Man, I know it's still early, but do you get some sort of more of a satisfaction during this second run knowing that, like, you have the respect of the boys, you have the respect of people who know you're the first Intercontinental IWGP champ? You know that you had that first run as one of the longest reigning United States champions. I know it's early, but do you get any more or any sort of different satisfaction out of this second run as opposed to the first run with WWE?
Yeah, it's different because I have a much different mindset now. I'm not just at a different stage of my life, I'm at a different stage of my career. So things that used to be super important to me aren't as important anymore. And things that I didn't really care that much about, now I'm gonna take the time to be like, no, wait a minute. We gotta pay some attention to that. I've also, at this stage of my career, gotten better at picking and choosing my battles because I'm known for speaking up when most people go, maybe you shouldn't say anything. Nah, fuck that, I got something to say. Yeah. And sometimes that was youthful exuberance. You gotta play the long game, not the short game. So I have a better understanding of professional wrestling, of the business, of the industry, of performing, all of those years and the different companies that I've worked for and all the things that I've learned from the different people that I've worked with all are coming to fruition now and culminating in this current MVP. So there's definitely a sense of satisfaction that comes with knowing that you're good at what you do and being a guy that makes other people around him better. And like LeBron, he steps on the court. He's the best player on the court. But whatever team he's on is usually going to win because he makes those other guys better. And in that regard, I have a certain level of confidence that comes with trial and error. Like, I've done this. I've succeeded and I've failed, and I know what I'm doing. So when they hand me the mic and they go, hey, listen, that whole segment just changed up, but MVP, you got to do this VIP lounge and you got 5 minutes to prepare. I'm not nervous. I don't sweat. It's like, all right, no problem. We're good. And whoever's with me, you good? All right, we good. All right, cool. Let's go. Let's go make this thing work. So there's a different satisfaction that just comes with being a little older, a little more mature, and having a better understanding for the whole game.
Now, I know before you, and this kind of ties into everything kind of going on in the world, before you came back to WWE, you were doing a one-man show about, you know, your life, you know, your time behind bars, coming back from all that. And, you know, we had a man by the name of Corey Jacobs on the show a few weeks ago, and he spoke at length about, you know, systematic racism and exactly how the police system and the jail system conspires against like young black men and women to keep them behind bars. And, you know, and there's so many layers to this topic, but, you know, as somebody who's lived that life, who's done their time, came back and is one of the success stories, because, you know, I've talked to him a lot, and just knowing that once you get out of jail, they make it so hard for anybody to get regular jobs, get loans, get credit, get all this type of stuff. You've been through the system. You've seen it. You've lived it. What has it been like for you? And on top of that, just seeing everything going on in the world, what are your thoughts on just movements like, you know, defunding the police or anything going on when it comes to the killers of Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery? And George
man,
Floyd.
You could spend an hour reading off the list of names.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it short.
Justice. Mm. And it's funny too, to that point, because, you know, I'm amused by the people who do the whole Blue Lives Matter thing. Right. And I'm amused by it because that's a direct piss take on Black Lives Matter. Because at no point in history has anyone ever treated the police like their lives don't matter. You show me how many cops there are that were shot and killed, and the person that shot and killed them wasn't brought to justice almost immediately. Mm-hmm. If they don't allocate the entire department resources to go find the guy that killed the cop. But as you said, we can go down the list of people who cops killed. We know, we watched them. We watched Pantaleo choke Eric Garner to death. Yeah. The coroner ruled it a homicide. No justice, nothing. Yeah, he killed him, he made a mistake, oh well. I mean, imagine you could kill somebody in your job and go, oh, sorry about that. And the worst thing that happens is you get fired. So I get heated about that because, you know, people say, oh, well, the system failed us. No, the system didn't fail us. The system that never had us in mind, it wasn't designed for us. So it works exactly as it's supposed to work. And I look at now with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, and, you know, even there we have issues because, you know, I'm not necessarily a huge proponent of the Black Lives Matter organization,
right.
Of the movement, I could not be a bigger proponent. And, you know, there's issues in that about, you know, who's quote unquote hijacking the movement and what's going on, you know. So it's a weight on my shoulders sometimes, and it's depressing because now I have a son, and my son is, his mother's Cambodian. I'm biracial, black and white. So he's a little United Nations kid, you know, he's a little person of color. And I have to have these discussions with him, you know, at 5, 6 years old. And, you know, my mother, a red-haired, green-eyed, freckle-faced white woman from Cincinnati, Ohio, had to have the talk with me. Mm. And, you know, for most people, when they talk about the talk, they think about the birds and the bees, yeah, where babies come from. Yeah. But we as men of color in this country, we get a different talk about how to conduct yourself when you're dealing with the police. And it just boggles my mind that, you know, in a twisted way, I'm grateful for Trump's presidency. Okay. Because it reminded us just how racist this country truly is at its core. Right. And when people like Colin Kaepernick protest racism, the racism is such a part of America's DNA. When you protest racism, people feel like you're protesting America itself.
Which you are.
And now it's
well, I mean, it's to his definition, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it was. That's what it's been built on, man. Like, it's what's crazy to me, and you mentioned it before, right? Like, nobody's ever said a cop's life doesn't matter. If a cop died in New Jersey yesterday, they're gonna shut down the block. There's gonna be a parade. They're gonna send a nice folded flag. They're gonna send him off like a true patriot, right? But with us, you know what I mean? It's always, well, what did he do? Oh, well, he was no angel. You know what I mean? They found some weed in his pocket. Oh, did you know that he did this 10 years ago? What's up?
No, or they'll say, oh, well, he got arrested for buying marijuana 7 years ago, so he deserved to be killed. He was, you know.
In what world is that? Does that ever make sense, man? It never does.
Well, let me ask you this. This is my question. When I see primarily white people who say, well, all lives matter. My question is, okay, well, tell me when Black lives mattered in this country.
They never have.
Certainly not. Certainly not. Never have. Never. We can agree Black lives only mattered as property at that time. That was their only significance, right? So the Emancipation Proclamation was signed. And then we're in the Reconstruction era, Jim Crow. Well, we know for a fact Black lives didn't matter then.
Facts.
The Civil Rights Act was passed in 64. And it was rejected and opposed violently by the majority of this nation. They didn't want Black people in the same water fountain, same lunch counter, same schools. So Black lives didn't matter at that point either. I was born in 73. When did Black lives matter? When the CIA was funneling crack into Black communities? What was once a conspiracy theory, now we know this to be an absolute.
We know this for
fact.
Yeah.
So tell me when Black lives mattered in this country. No one has been able to tell me that yet. And I pose that question. Tell me when Black lives have mattered in America, and then we can have that conversation. But no one's been able to answer that question for me yet.
Because everybody knows the answer. Everybody knows the answer. Just a couple more questions. I know we got to get you out of here soon. In the workplace, man, like you're somebody who's always spoke his mind, and you're somebody who would, you know, just kind of like all of us, wherever we work, we've had to have uncomfortable conversations with people that don't understand like the last three things you just said. You know what I mean? Like, not a single clue. But on the outside looking in, I'm looking at the WWE right now, and there's more stars of color than I've probably ever seen in my life in prominent positions, right? Like, I read some stat where it was like 12 out of like the 15 champions are all like people of color. And I don't know when they've even had that many titles, but I know for damn sure there's never been that many Black champions, brown champions, female, Black women, like all in the forefront. And if they're not champions, they're people like you who was on every segment, getting prominent placement on every show. Has that been something that's been deliberate? You know what I mean? Like, and is that a result of some of the uncomfortable conversations that may have happened behind the scenes with people that make those decisions? Like the people, you know what I mean? That the whole world of what goes on behind there. Has any of that kind of like been the reason why we're starting to see more Black and brown stars on Raw and SmackDown and NXT?
I can't say for certain only because I haven't been in those meetings. But I do know when I was a producer in the meetings that I was in, careful consideration was given to lots of things like that. You know, there'd be a conversation about, well, we want to do this segment. Well, wait a minute. How is that going to look if we do that with this guy and this girl, whatever the case may be? So I'm glad to say that there is consideration being given to those things, those issues. As far as those uncomfortable conversations leading to more championships, I can't say because I haven't been in those conversations personally. But I do know this. What I can say is before Paul Heyman's departure, I know he had a direct hand in a lot of that, at least as far as Raw goes.
Mm.
And
it was noticeable.
You know,
It was noticeable. I mean, I said it was super noticeable. I remember I'm turning on Raw one day. You got Zelina, you got Andrade, you got Angel, you got yourself, Cruz, Ricochet, Lashley, like just black and brown people, Sasha Banks, black and brown people everywhere on that on Raw.
And to Heyman's credit, let me say this, because you know, like I know there are people going on, you know, currently, I hear some of the social media chatter about uplifting black talent in wrestling. And you have some people that say, oh, they don't do anything with black talent. And then certain black talent will win a championship. And then those same people go, oh, you're just giving them that because of whatever. But dude, how do you want it, man? You know, you want black champions and black talent uplifted, but then when they do, your response is, oh, well, you're just doing that because of blah, blah, blah. I don't give a fuck why they're doing it. They're doing it.
Thanks.
And let's have more of that, you know? And to Heyman's credit, if you ask him, hey, man, how come, you know, you had all these people of color in these positions? His answer straight up was, man, I look at the hands I'm dealt, and I play my best cards. I didn't go with people of color. I went with the most talented people that I could use in those situations. Mm. Mic drop.
ain't nothing more you can say to that, man. Last question I want to ask you before we get out of here, man. The Hurt Business, bro. I know there's been a lot of people talking about, you know, bringing back the Nation of Domination and if there was a new Nation of Domination, who would be in it? Yada yada yada. Now we see the Hurt Business coming up with yourself, Shelton, Lashley. Like you've made it clear that like you target young black talent as well. You looked at Cedric, you've looked at Mustafa Ali, brown talent as well, Ricochet, Apollo. Like, is this your sort of roundabout way of having another new black power stable?
No, short answer is no.
Okay.
You know, because I've been hearing the chatter and I've been seeing that, and I don't want to do the new anything.
Right.
You know, the Nation was done. It was awesome in the time that it was done. It was needed. You know, stars were made. I don't want to rehash something else. I want to bring something new. And I don't necessarily, and our approach to the Hurt Business, me and Bobby, as you know, are legitimate friends. Mm-hmm. Like, away from wrestling, we boys. Shelton is one of my closest friends. I just like making money with my friends. You know what I'm saying? So, and I see young, talented guys that I asked to work with Apollo. I said, man, give me him, man. Let me work with him, man. I know we can get it out of him. Mm-hmm. I know he's got it. He's tremendously talented. He just needs a little coaxing. He just needs a little help, some understanding. And, you know, me and Apollo, we'll work on things together. We'll have conversations before certain segments. And he's coachable. That's why he's being successful. Now, there are guys, I've always wanted to work with Ricochet. Ricochet has been one of my favorite dudes for years.
Incredible.
That guy, I used to tell him, if you could talk like you wrestle, you'll be a millionaire. I used to tell him that all the time. And now, unfortunately, I also tell him all the time now, at this stage of my career, I can't have the kind of match that I would like to have with you. But we could still have a great match just because of my veteranship and understanding of how things go. But I have no interest in rehashing the Nation of Domination. And, you know, while I do want to present myself and Bobby and Shelton as, you know, strong black male role models, successful, we're businessmen. We're not trying to make a statement on race. Mm-hmm. We're trying to just make a statement. And in our case, what we're trying to do, it's not about black or white. It's about gold and green.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I love the fact that there are young men of color that can watch us and go, oh, I want to be like them. Because when I was a kid, I wanted to be like Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas. You know, I was like, man, when I grow up, I want to look like that. I want to be like them. Yeah. So I'm happy that I'm able to provide something like that for young people of color. Like I try to tell people all the time, when Kofi won the WWE Championship, most people just couldn't truly understand the significance of that. As we were growing up, what were we watching? You know, all our superheroes were white.
Yep.
All our action heroes were white.
Yep.
We didn't have anybody that looked like us to identify with. And, you know, now, you know, I used to identify with whatever, you know, I wanted to be Bruce Lee and Jean-Claude Van Damme and Rambo. You know, they only gave Action Jackson one movie. So to that point, yeah, I like when young, you know, people of color can come up and say, hey man, you know, we really appreciate, you know, what you do for the culture, or, you know, that you're this role model, that, you know, you came from the hood, you did time, you lived that life and you overcame it. And, you know, now you're a beacon of hope for people who come from that. I'm happy about that. But as far as the creative role of the nation, I mean, the Hurt Business, I'm not interested in rehashing the nation.
Right. Well, shout out to the Hurt Business, because business is good. Appreciate you as always.
Correction. Lashley is the CEO of the Hurt Business.
Oh, it's my fault. I don't want Lashley mad at me, bro. I remember an old story when I was over there. I think he got pissed off at something, and I don't even think I've ever told this story. I think, like, I handed him a script. This is like back in the bend over and smack the cheeks era of Lashley.
That never happened.
That never happened, right? And I remember him getting like so angry and saying, like, just seeing him being like real life angry, not like pro wrestling angry, like the fear of God went over me. I was like, all right, yeah, I'm not doing this. Anybody, do you want to, Vince, you want to tell him to do this? Because I'm not trying to get beat up by a legitimate ass kicker and Bobby Lashley. But that's
and it's funny to that point. I mean, that's why, you know, Lashley is the CEO of the Hurt Business. Mm. I'm the executive vice president of personnel and managing partner. And we haven't decided what Shelton's executive position is yet. We got to figure that one out for him. But
he's still Lashley's being grandfathered in.
Say that again.
I said he's still being grandfathered in, man. He's still got to work his way into it.
Yeah. He's still going through the hiring process. he doesn't have his official title yet.
MVP, man.
But I'm sure it'll be something like executive vice president of pain disbursement or some shit.
Something like that. Stretching or ankle twisting or something like that. Man, MVP. One of my very, very good friends. It's always good talk to you. So happy for you. So proud of you, man. And I just want to thank you for coming on Say Less with Kaz and Low Key. If you got anything else you want to plug, I mean, you want to plug Raw, whatever it is, follow Instagram, Twitter. This is your time, man. Go for it.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at the 305 MVP. What else we got going on? Yeah, you could catch me, Bobby Lashley, and Shelton Benjamin, and probably more to be named later, on Monday Night Raw, USA Network. I also have a cameo now, so I'm doing cameos.
Oh yeah, plug the cameo, man. That's money. Plug the cameo, bro.
it's www.cameo.com/MVP305 or 305 MVP. I'm not hard to find, but for a very nominal fee, I will give you a personal message giving you congratulations or encouragement, or I'll cuss you out, or whoever you ask. We want MVP to give this person a proper dressing down. I'll send that person a message giving them a dressing down like only MVP can. So that's my cameo. And you touched earlier on my one-man show, yes, which yes, obviously is in hiatus. But I have every intention, once the world gets back to some semblance of normal, to bring back my one-man show. And I'm pretty stoked about the content of it. And I guess now being back on TV, working with WWE, we'll probably actually finally take it on tour. So I did it on the Jericho Cruise. It was awesome. I debuted it over in London. And that was really cool. So The feedback and everything that I've received from it has been huge. I talk about, you know, criminal justice reform. I talk about my life growing up in Miami, doing time, why I went to prison, a lot of personal things. And, you know, I talk about an experience where now I'm MVP. I'm on video games and action figures. And, you know, I'm known by millions of people around the world. But when I sold my house not too long ago, I wanted to rent a house until I could find something else I wanted to buy. And I had 5 different lease applications denied because I'm a convicted felon when they did the background check. And it was a wake up call for me because I'm living high on the horse. I'm MVP. I'm making money. I got cars. I got houses. I'm, you know, doing good. And I went to go rent a house. And it was a slap in the face to remind me that, yeah, you might be a WWE star and millions of people might know you. But as far as we're concerned, you're still number 190197. You're a convicted felon and we're not renting our house to you. And I, you know, that I tell that story in the one man show. That was a huge wake up call for me to remind me that, and that's why it's called Most Valuable Prisoner. You know, no matter how high you get, just remember they always have ways to bring your ass back down to earth. That's right. And in that case, that was a very sobering reminder. And it made me think about, okay, what about the people that can't run fast or jump high or tell jokes or entertain? What about those people who want to get a job, who want to pay taxes, who want a place to live, but can't do any of that because of that scarlet letter, that convicted felon background? And that's something that as a society, we got to work on, because if the whole concept is you go to prison, you pay your debt to society, then you're supposed to have a clean slate. And when you come out, you're supposed to be able to vote. You're supposed to be able to live where you want to live. As long as you're paying taxes and as long as you're abiding by the laws, you know, you shouldn't still be punished for whatever crime that you committed and served your time for. So on that note, that's all I got.
Brother, it's always good talking to you, man. You stay safe. We catch you every Monday nights, every pay-per-view. And you be safe out there, man. Thank you so much for
Likewise.
Coming on Say Less, bro.
Hold it down. Be well.
Yes,
Congratulations,
sir.
Too, man.
Oh, thank you. The wife's right here, by the way. So, you know, show it off.
Put her on camera and you get off camera.
Hey, I ain't stupid. I got the cameraman right here looking at us. So we good. Awesome.
Thank you very much. You married a real one. You got a good man. Congratulations to you as well. You guys be happy. Yeah. Take care.
Take care, brother. Thank you so much. Jake, let's get out of here, man. What quick hitters do we got before we wrap up?
See, the NBA is planning to collaborate, or has been collaborating with Twitter over the last few months to build a plan to kind of instill audience noise and stuff.
Shout out to my guy TJ, man. You know TJ over at Twitter Sports, Nigerian boy, heading that whole initiative up. Mm. If you go and use the hashtag NBA Twitter, they'll be able to use your voices in the NBA game. So like,
they're getting. How does that work?
I'm not sure. I haven't read the article yet.
Well, you get to announce shit?
I'm assuming it's going to be like crowd. Oh, Jake, let us know.
Yeah, what is it?
Nice. I know certain teams have reached out to their fans. My friend Aruni, he's a big Brooklyn Nets supporter. Yeah, Aruni. Yeah. Brooklyn Nets reached out to him to be one of the faces in the on the Zoom call in like the video screen. So like they're reaching out like to the biggest fans. So, like when they play, they'll have like their faces like in the crowd, like as they're playing, like cheering for the team and stuff. Which is creepy, but I mean like if you know, given the circumstances of what's going on, I guess it's kinda cool.
So like just let us just watch from home.
Dog, they're
like,
trying everything, bro.
Just shut the fuck up.
They're losing so much money. They're trying every sort of partnership they could try. Like Twitter, you got a bag for us? Yes. Let's go do that.
But like, it's like, don't water it down and don't like make it corny. Like this, all right, cool. Like I don't understand like the whole like interaction, like the fan interaction when you submit your voice or whatever. Like I don't know what that's gonna do for the game.
Hashtag based, like a certain decibel level based off.
Oh.
Late Show or Clipper Nation.
Are they gonna have like trending topics on the screen or something like that?
I think a lot of it will be shown on the board.
This is during the game.
So during the game, I guess.
Those polls that they'll send out, those will be like thrown up during the game. I don't know exactly what they'll be, but supposedly.
This is the future, bro. This is where
I'm happy watching it.
I'm gonna botch whoever it was, so I'm not gonna.
That's all right, Jake.
But they said next year might require a bubble too.
I think so. I think it will, cause it's the games and the latest the games go is October, and then training camp starts in November, and they're trying to have games like.
Wait, they're going back to back?
Yeah, they're trying to like.
They're trying to go to December.
They're trying to have opening night like December, like Christmas.
That'd be fire.
December 2nd, I think.
I think opening night should have been. I mean, you know, if you're a real NBA fan,
that's fine.
The season really starts on Christmas anyway, right? So like, I feel like that should.
Well, I mean, after All Star, that's when it's season. After All Star, that's when it really starts.
I'm a Knicks fan. I haven't seen like relevant Knicks basketball after the All Star break since
73.
Well, since Jeremy Lin and Mello Tom, but whatever. What else we got, Jake?
We got Pat Mahomes buying part of the Royals using that.
That right there.
I love it.
Yo, that is an investment that he took that money. I don't know if he got it yet, but he took that money and put it somewhere fucking smart.
Dog, if you're about to touch $500 million just on your football money,
right?
You gotta invest it in some shit.
But no, and I get it. Like, you know, I'm sure a lot of these players have invested or like small investments or you know, businesses or whatever. But that, what is he? 24?
He's 24 years old, Super Bowl MVP.
24 years old, Super Bowl MVP, Super Bowl champion. That's great.
He's Mr.
That was beautiful to see.
Young black man getting that ownership.
That's not minority owner. Part owner.
And
that language is different.
On top of that, like, he's like gonna be Mr. Kansas City, bro. Yeah. Like, you don't get that ownership stake unless you're like Magic Johnson. Like, you've already like made your dude. He's already brought that city a championship. He's already Mr. Kansas City.
And white folks was like, come on over, buddy.
And that's not even
endorsing.
Bro,
that's insane.
Bro, shout out to Patrick Mahomes, man. One of the best football players.
My
in the
man
world,
about to
bro.
He about to try to own NBC after that shit too.
Don't say that shit.
We already know what happens when you try to own NBC.
No sir.
We know what happens after that. What else we got, Jake?
An update on the Lou Will story. Something came out.
Oh, okay. What's the update on Wingate?
Yeah, let's talk about him and Kendrick Perkins.
him and KP. I feel for KP, bro.
Why?
I feel for him because it's like.
KP's a bozo.
He's got a respectable job as an ESPN
analyst. You don't say respectable analyst. Shit, shut up.
Everybody knows you weren't like really that nice in the NBA. So anytime he says anything to say, they're like, "Nigga, you average like 4 points."
Shut up.
It's like, no matter. I think he's good at his job. He's good at his job. His job is to get people talking, to get attention, and he does it. He's got the gift of take.
I will give
and it's
him
a
that.
Gift. Not everybody has it. There's been so many former pro athletes, so many talking heads that don't garner the attention that Kendrick Perkins gets. And he's still relatively young in this. Shout out to him. Shout out to Booger McFarlane? There's like a handful of like new like former athletes kind of like doing really well in that environment. You don't have to bring up the fact that he wasn't like a fucking monster in the NBA, like to be good at what he does now, but
you gotta have some kind of analysis. Like, you gotta have some kind of skill set to understand what, like, a good player, like, what numbers look like. Something like when I hear his takes, like, it's just like him just throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks.
I get where he's coming from, though, man. Like, Kendrick Perkins wasn't, like, I remember Kendrick Perkins, like, in high school. Like, he was, like, baby Shaq.
Yeah.
And, you know, going into college and going to the NBA, he's played on some very talented teams. He's played on the Cavaliers with LeBron. He's played with KD and Russ. He's played with a lot. Like, he has a lot of
He has great experience. I'll give him that. He has great experience. Right. But it's like, bro, like, were you really that nigga?
He knows not to be messy.
He gets
all that.
Man, listen.
Something can just be said with a better filter. Yeah. I know America wants no filter, but that could have used a filter.
Yeah, but it doesn't hurt that Kendrick Perkins is like 6'10", 280. Like, what are you really going to say to him? Like, he was a goon in the
Nigga, loose it.
I mean, it was all cute and sweet, but at the end of the day, Kendrick was bullied. Like,
that's what I'm saying. I'm like, yo, what are you really going to do?
That's what I fucked with Kendrick for. I was like, yo, nigga, I don't give a fuck what what do you want to do? Like, he said it in the nicest way ever on first take. Like,
he said, these are basketball players. They're not fighters. They're not this.
But, yeah, calling him out, like, are you really going to fight me or not? Like, that was really what he was saying on first take this morning. Like, all aside the elegant bullshit, he was really like, are you going to fight me or not?
I love
nah,
this shit.
Shut the fuck up. I'm going to do my job, say what I'm going to say, keep it moving, be happy, make my check, and that's all it is.
I love to see it.
I like it.
Jake, what else we got, brother?
I like it.
Pretty much good. Just want to leave us. You guys called something else that happened?
I'm ready to roll, man. You ready to roll?
Jake, is that it?
No, you guys called. I mean, predicted.
Something we predicted.
Yeah,
oh.
The whole government alien thing.
Oh, aliens? We got aliens? What's the alien? What are we looking? What happened? We got aliens? We got action?
They're finally admitting it that like they have one.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely.
They're admitting it that they have one.
They're slowly getting the world ready, bro. They're like, listen.
They're gonna slowly release that footage.
Any day now.
It's a slow album rollout.
It's an album rollout.
The government is doing an album rollout for aliens. This is what it looks like. Here's the first single.
The aircraft is
here's
the second
the
single.
Here's the artwork. Here's the track listing. Here's the full project.
They're gonna show the feature guests. They're gonna show everybody who knew about the aliens.
The full project is just like us getting taken over, taken away from Earth.
I don't think the aliens want smoke.
We said that last week.
I said, yo, I said there are aliens amongst us. Bro,
don't let it talk to you like that, Jake. This is a lion's den. This is the man cave. Don't let her talk to you like that.
Jake.
Don't let her talk to you like that.
Don't let her talk to you like that, bro.
That's my fiance, too.
Like the person at the
I got your back.
I know who you're talking about, Jazz.
He's pulling us right
now. All right,
I'm gonna...
Shoot back, man. Shoot back.
That's a compliment. I love
that. That is not a compliment.
Jake, you know I love you, right? Tell us.
Jake, if I was you, I would have shot right back.
Jake,
bro. That is not a compliment.
Jake
is an alien. The fuck?
Jake. If I was you, I would have had my alien self pop out the mouth.
Right. That's it.
Right. Oh, man. All right. Is that the last we got?
You guys got anything to plug?
I think that's it.
We got the Versus playlist coming out?
We got the Chi-Chi
will be out probably, what's today?
Today is Tuesday. This will be out Thursday. This will be out Thursday or Friday. Thursday?
You gotta tell me.
All right, be out Thursday, yeah.
All right, so yeah, I'll probably have it out this weekend. Right. Check it out on Apple Music, low-key UHTN, 2 Chainz vs. Rick Ross, the cheat sheet will be up, and this might be the longest one I've ever made.
Oh yeah, that's gonna be my favorite.
This might be the longest one I've ever made. But yes, it will be out, and the Apple Music show is coming very soon. Actually, I can't say it on camera, so.
Can't say it on camera, yeah, it's all right. It's better, you don't wanna blow your load on the announcement.
It's coming though.
You only get one shot to do the announcement, you don't wanna do it. You don't want to blow here.
August, that's all I can say.
All right. Shout out to Wilson Sports and brother for, always holding us down right here on Say Less with Kaz. Check out the best of Say Less with Kaz on Wilson Sports and brother YouTube pages. This week we have Jock Slade, the king of unboxing sneaker content on the best of Say Less. So if you missed that episode on the podcast, you can see it in its full video entirety with Wilson Sports and brother. My name is Kaz. This is Low Key.
What up?
Jake behind the boards.
Yeah.
Eddie.
No.
Josh.
No.
Shout out to Jazz and Sid for joining us backstage. Thank you so much. My name is Kaz.
My name is Low.
Stay safe.
We're to go ahead.
Stay free.
Yes.
And always say less.
Yes. Wear your fucking mask.
Wear your fucking mask, all right?